Sería muy mal.
Radio Real. Real Radio, your reality.
Welcome to Off the Shelf,
the Second Life radio show and podcast about books and the people who love them.
I'm Kegia Girardi.
And this is Simeon Beresford.
Join us as we survey the literary scene in our virtual world. Hello, and welcome to our first episode of Off the Shelf.
We have two great guests lined up to talk to us today. Persephone Phoenix is the owner of Blue Angels Poet Dive, the oldest poetry open mic venue in Second Life.
Then we have Janaya Moran, who will tell us about her work with the Virtual World Story Project.
But first we have Persephone. Persephone, you are the longest established poet I know on Second Life, but were you first to hold events?
Well, thank you, Simeon. Yes, I wasn't the first to hold events, but I have been around for a while. I've been around since 2004. When I joined, the Poetry Guild was already active, and it was one of the many guilds that were elven guilds. So for me, Second Life poetry began with the elves, which I always thought was rather romantic. And they would have events at different venues. So they would go sometimes at a rooftop, sometimes in a garden, and they would have a small circle of poets who would meet and exchange ideas. I began a little bit later to host my own events with a bit of a different flavor. So I've been around for a while, but there was Second Life poetry before me. In fact, there's going to be an article about that in the upcoming Vitruvius magazine, a retrospective of Second Life poetry. So for more information about those early days, you might check that article out.
Persephone, how did your open mics differ from the previous ones you'd been participating in?
Well, those weren't really open mics. They were more a kind of just a sharing where people would come together in a circle. The poetry would be put in a note card. People would read the note card. No one, kind of performed the poem in real time. We would all each read the note card that was being discussed, and then we would discuss the poem. So it was more kind of like a light workshop feel. It was very different. What I wanted was something that I had experienced in real life quite often. I had helped to organize open mics in Brooklyn. I had performed at open mics in the Lower East Side, Surf Reality, Collective Unconscious, these various open mics that were a part of the vibrant spoken word and poetry scene, the New Yorican. And so I wanted something like that in Second Life. At the time, I was no longer in New York. I'm back in New York now. But at the time that I joined Second Life, I was in the wilds of Canada. And I really missed that connection to poetry that was immediate and in real time. So initially, even though we didn't have voice, we still performed poetry in real time by typing it out in real time. If that makes any sense. You still kind of got the sense of when pauses occurred, and I don't know.
Yeah. So, but you also did quite a few plays. Did you start with plays, or did you start with poetry?
That's an excellent question. For me, I think that I probably began with improvisation, spoken word and improvised theater performances through scening. I first hosted scening competitions where I would make these silly prizes. Or actually back then also the Lindens used to provide prizes. Hosts for events were paid a little bit of money through the Lindens at that time. This was a while back. And so you could make 250 Linden by hosting an event, and you had as many as 500 Lindens to give away as prizes. So I would initially host scening competitions. And then after that, I began to venture out into hosting poetry once I got my first place. I was fortunate to win a contest in Second Life that gave me land, and I've been a lifetime member since January of 2005. So having that land, I dedicated it to public use from that time onward, and first started with the Phoenix Spa, which hosted groovy poetry nights.
I love it.
Yeah. And then that led to the Blue Angel, which was dedicated only to poetry and literary events.
Uh-huh. And the theatrical works, they took place with other people. Somebody else organized them, and you... Sorry. You first.
I did used to host some scene, you know, I hosted my own scening competitions before I realized that anyone else was doing anything out there. I had not seen a Second Life play. In fact, I remember somebody asking me, well, do you think that there'll ever come a time when people do just full plays in Second Life? And I said, well, it would take a very different kind of approach to Second Life, because so many people at that time were approaching it only as entertainment and not as a place to really make things other than, you know, Second Life content that was physical content. And so I just couldn't imagine that people would adhere to a rehearsal schedule. And yet here we are years later, you know, 4+ years later, and there are plays in Second Life, and I've been privileged to be able to be in a few of them.
Uh-huh. So did you come to Second Life with any artistic or cultural expectations, or were you just interested in gaming or building? Or because, as you said, the cultural side has grown over the years. But did you expect it to appear?
I expected it, yes, because I'd already been doing community building in another setting. I was in The Sims Online and was hosting poetry events, open mic poetry events in The Sims Online. And in fact, I had a big wall-o haiku where instead of paying people to skill, or, you know, there were places where you could go and you could earn virtual money by skilling up or doing silly things. And instead, I paid people to make haiku. And so I had this gigantic wall of haiku, silly haiku. They weren't real haiku. They were more like Senryu, obviously. But it was a lot of fun. And so I had fully expected to be able to do some of that same community building in Second Life, but I was blown away at the extent to which that was possible here, and I never went back to The Sims Online again. So.
Yes, a surprising number of people started there. I know there's a big karaoke scene that's migrated over from The Sims to Second Life. So, is all your theatrical work still improv, or have you moved over to other things?
No, the improv came about out of my interest in Augusto Boal. I have a BFA and MFA in theater, and I'm really interested in theater of the oppressed. So I still do some of that, and in one of my events that I co-host with Salamander Maroon on Wednesday nights called Predicate. But I've also done some plays. I've done, a few now. I just finished with The Tempest, but I was also Dionysus in The Bacchae. I did several different performances with the ACT UP. So yeah, I've done a little bit of everything.
All right. So what days and events do you host? You sound like a very busy person.
Yeah, I tend to get my schedule filled up. On Sunday nights, ever since late 2006, I've been hosting the Blue Angel Poetry Open Mic, which runs from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Second Life time. And we've never missed a Sunday, and that's something I'm really happy about. That's largely due to the community. When I haven't been able to get in world, it happened anyway without me, and I came for the last 15 minutes. Yeah, it was wonderful. But so that is probably the biggest thing I do. But I also have the Wednesday Predicate, which is scening and fun word games, and that's hosted at Da Vinci Isle in their setting called Idols. Mm-hmm. I also host a poetry workshop on Saturday mornings. It was at 10 a.m. Recently, we've moved it to 8 a.m. to accommodate your tea time over there in England. And the last thing. Let's see, what else do I host? I host one more thing. I can't even remember. That's the main part of it. Occasionally there are other events that happen where I'm bringing in a reader to the Blue Angel and kind of producing more than hosting actively.
Mm-hmm. And which of your achievements are you most proud of?
Probably the Blue Angel. I had had a huge sim before the Blue Angel, and certainly that was complex, and we did a lot of stuff there. But the Blue Angel I'm really proud of because it was the first venue in Second Life that I'm aware of anyway that was dedicated only to poetry, and the community there is really vibrant. I think that I've seen hundreds and hundreds of poets perform there, and a lot of the people that perform there now came in not writing any poetry at all. In fact, one of the poems that's going to be included in the anthology coming up, which is going to be called Blue Angel Landing, was written by an artist who's a visual artist who'd never written a poem, and he wrote a poem in response to one of the poetry challenges. Each time we have an open mic, I post a poetry challenge to the audience, and so yeah, I'm hearing major typing also.
Yeah,
mute the mic while typing.
Oh, which means I've totally lost my place. And your biggest mistake, what was that? When did you go, oh?
Recruiting Peggy to write poetry.
No, the biggest mistake was my second day in World. And I really ticked off one of the, at that time, one of the most famous content developers in Second Life, because I didn't understand the difference between vendors and avatars. And all I knew was that I had intended to buy this thing and there was a lot of lag. I didn't know what caused it not to give me the item. It took the money from my account, but it didn't give me the item. And I was upset. And so at that time, you could negatively rate avatars. And I gave a negative rating, thinking that I was negatively rating the machine that was giving me the item, because the name that I was, it wasn't like a simple name like Bob or Jill or something I would understand as an avatar's name. And then I felt the wrath of that content creator and had to meet and kind of kowtow and say, oh, I'm so very sorry, I'm a noob, I didn't understand, please forgive me. And so anyway.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what people experience when they come to the Blue Angel Poetry open mic on Sunday evenings?
Certainly. Well, what I see may be different from what other people see, but what I see is something that feels very much like a revival, like an old town, you know, old timey spiritual revival only for poetry, where people gather on Sunday nights. And it's a very diverse crowd, writers coming from all over the world, but also from all over the place in terms of their process and styles. And we tend to get between 20 and 30, sometimes 35 people to come, usually at least 20 readers. It's pretty good. And so people get called up in order that they instant message me to read between one and three poems. And then at the end, we share our challenge poems.
Oh. Well, I suppose we better bring this to a close, or we won't have time for our next guest.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much.
I am so happy that you came. You were one of the first people that I met in Second Life, so it just feels like it's the appropriate way to start our new project here.
Now we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll talk to Janaya.
Hello again. That musical interlude was Last Tango by Magnatune artist Jive Ass Sleepers from the album Gratis Jazz.
Now we would like to welcome Junaya Moran. Junaya has a background in education, writing and storytelling, and her work with the Virtual World Story Project draws on all these experiences.
Janaya, welcome to Off the Shelf, and thank you for coming. I'm excited to be talking to you about the story project. Could you give listeners a little background? Yay! Could you give listeners some background into the project?
Sure. Well, the Virtual World Story Project was never intended to be. At least that was not my intention when I came into Second Life. I had thought that I would maybe, you know, teach a few writing classes because that's what I do in real life, and you know, just enjoy myself. But then almost from the second I set foot in Second Life, I started hearing these great stories. And I realized that while I could teach writing classes, what really interested me were the lessons that Second Life had to teach us. And of course, I think that stories are a great way to explore those lessons. So,
what kind of stories are you talking about? Are they real life stories, Second Life experiences?
Well, see, here's the great thing. People come to Second Life, and what they learn here translates into real life and vice versa. So let me give you an example. I was introduced one day to this young man who was a camel trader. And, you know, he was a DJ, just a really personable, nice kid. We had a great conversation about the Talmud and music and loved him to pieces. It wasn't until 3 months later I discovered he was on a ventilator 24/7, and the only part of his body he can move is his thumb. So here's somebody who came into Second Life, you know, unable to move literally, and he has a life here. He makes a living here. He runs a support group for disabled people. He's just amazing. So that's the kind of story that, you know, you just want to write down and save and share with everyone you know.
It is. So how did hearing these stories become the Virtual World Story Project?
That's a good question. What I began to realize was that a lot of people in real life, A, didn't know about Second Life, and B, didn't take it very seriously. But here I was having these amazing experiences that I knew were both entertaining. I mean, how could you not want to hear a story like that? But also had something to teach us. So I thought, well, as a writer in real life, what would be the best way to get this across? So first I started a blog. And, you know, it's read, but what's the really good way to reach people? With a book. So I decided to start the Virtual World Story Project, collect the stories, and publish them as anthologies.
And how has it grown since that first spark of inspiration?
The project hasn't been in existence that long. I think we're on our third month now. But what I quickly realized was that a lot of people really don't know how to write, you know, and they're intimidated by the process, even though they might have a great story to tell. And of course, I didn't want to have to write their stories for them. That didn't feel right. So what I did is I built an island with writing exercises that people can do to learn how to write.
And that's where your background in education and writing has come into play again.
Right.
You can't get away from it, can you?
No, it's kind of fun, though. I mean, I write and teach storytelling classes online in real life for universities. So it translated seamlessly over into Second Life. So I actually offer free writing classes with the hopes of getting stories that will then be submitted to the project. But I also wanted people to be able to do things on their own without me guiding them or, you know, in a classroom situation. So I created the Storybook Trail, and that's on my island. People walk along the trail and do an exercises that teach them the fundamentals of writing. So when they get to the end of the trail, theoretically, they should be able to write their stories.
That's an amazing idea, and it definitely takes advantage of the platform of Second Life, not something you can necessarily do in real life. So what's been the response?
I've been really surprised. Several universities have come to me asking me to explain how I came up with the idea and how I use it to get students involved, because a lot of new people are a little intimidated by Second Life when they come in. And knowing that, I created this to be very, very simple. You just walk, you know, which is a skill most people have managed to master. You walk and then you click on a flower and it gives you a note card. So the idea of immersing yourself and being able to experience what you're writing about is fundamental to Second Life. It brings everything alive and changes the experience completely.
When I met you, it was at one of your workshops that you were holding at Alliance Library. How have your workshops been received at Second Life?
Well, I didn't want to just tell other people's stories. I'm a storyteller and writer myself, and part of the value of being here for me is what it teaches me about myself. So I decided that I would start to host a series of storytelling events to share my stories, but also show people what could be done. So I try to create an environment that's very welcoming. We sit around a campfire on stumps. We have trees and fireflies and pretty pictures, and it's a circle. And so I share a story, and then I help others write and share their own stories. So far, I have been completely blown away by how good people are. I mean, the material they've submitted is really remarkable. I'm very, very pleased and thrilled.
What kind of exercises do you do in the workshops to help people express themselves?
Okay, well, most people are a little hesitant to be, not only to write, but to share in public. So I wanted to make the point that writing comes naturally to everybody. Storytelling is sort of ingrained in us. And so if I can get them to jumpstart the process, they usually relax and get into it right away. So the first exercise I usually do is the top 25. So I would say to you, Kaguya, write the word healing at the top of your paper. Now, think of the first 25 things that come to mind. Don't edit, don't stop, just keep writing. And at the end of the exercise, you have a list of 25, and you write a story based on that. It's easy, people love it, makes the point that your mind really does know how to craft a story.
You mentioned healing as the word at the top of the list. I know you do a lot of work with healing and AIDS population in Second Life. How mm-hmm. does that tie in with the virtual story project and what you're doing here?
Yeah, you know that story of Nick, the guy that's on the ventilator? I met him when I was volunteering for a disabled group that helps disabled people get in. And then I was asked to work on Karuna, which is the HIV/AIDS sim. And part of the mandate for that sim, which is funded by a National Library of Medicine grant, is to collect stories of people who are dealing with HIV/AIDS. And so I've had direct experience of how powerful telling stories can be for those who are trying to heal. So that's another big aspect of writing stories. I think they're very healing.
Very good. How has being in Second Life changed your story, or has it yet?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I came to Second Life, oddly enough, because I needed to heal, although I didn't really realize that. I've been taking care of my mother for 18 months. She's a diabetic who was seriously, seriously ill. So I was a bit stressed and feeling a bit isolated and like I needed a community of people, but I was stuck here at home helping her. So I came on to Second Life and was immediately embraced by, you know, what I call the motley crew. You meet some pretty odd people in Second Life, but they're all wonderful. And not only has the community grown, but of course they've shared their stories with me and given me a place to be me and share me. So it's just marvelous.
Do you do more writing now than you were before?
I'll tell you what, I don't do more, but I do different kinds of writing. For the longest time, I was a journalist, and although I wrote about things like the environment and women's issues and profiles, it was always about other people. And what Second Life has taught me is that I really want to write about my experiences and the experiences of people around me and how they impact my life. So I do a lot more blogging. I do a lot more personal essays and sharing with others.
Great. So where can people find out more about what you're doing in online and in Second Life?
Well, we have a website. It's thevirtualworldstoryproject.com, or to make it easier for you, tvwsp.com. And that will tell you everything about everything from the classes to how to submit, etc. There's even a slural to Storybook Island. You can come to Storybook Island in Second Life and walk the story trail and submit your stories and get more information. Of course, you can IM me. Does that help?
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming and talking with us about the virtual
story
project. And I hope to hear more about your stories and your experiences here as time goes by.
Yes, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Before we finish the show, we'd like to tell you about some upcoming events that might be of interest to book writers. Bookstacks, in addition to the Guild of UK Writers, Horror Addicts, and West of Ireland Library, is hosting a horror fest next weekend, March 7th and 8th. This project is Simeon's baby, so I'm going to let him talk about the events that are scheduled.
Well, first of all, I'd like to mention Ems, who organized the first Horror Fest and is doing a lot in this one as well. I think it's only fair that we should say that it was her baby originally. I've just adopted it.
And that's Ems Maisie in Second Life.
Yes. She'll be holding her event on the Sunday at 10 a.m. But we'll start with the Saturday when we'll have a fashion show, just as we did at the last one. Well, we shall give everyone a chance to see goths or monsters, according to what sort of avatar they prefer, and a quiz, because Bookstacks wouldn't be Bookstacks without a quiz. West of Ireland will be contributing a reading, and the ANC Hotel will have a murder and mystery weekend, which will last for 2 hours, and I believe will involve a certain Dr. Frankenstein and a mummy, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to find that there was a werewolf in there somewhere. The science fiction, various horror writers will be reading things all over the weekend, including Mike Stackpole, a very well-known author. We'll be inaugurating our paranormal book club meeting, because it seemed like an appropriate time to do it, when Kagir Girardi will be discussing Dead Witch Walking, a very popular series, of which... I'm sorry.
Dead Witch Walking is the first of the books. Right. We're also going to end the Horror Fest with a costume party. So start checking out your horrific avatars now so you're ready for the event. Also, the following week, on March 10th, I'll be leading a book discussion in Caledon on The Awakening by Kate Chopin. This is an 1899 novella that was shocking at the time because it focused on a woman who wasn't happy being a wife and a mother in society, and so she made some choices that were very radical at the time. I hope you can join us at the Caledon Library for that discussion. You'll also want to check out the storytelling activities at West of Ireland Library. Jerry McMahon is hosting events 6 nights a week there, ranging from family favorites such as The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe to Irish classics. You can find out more about these and other events by joining the Bookstacks group or clicking on the subscriber on our island. And this has been a lot of fun, and Simeon and I look forward to talking to you again in 2 weeks.
Yes, and maybe next time I'll remember to get my lines out.
Off the Shelf is produced for Radio Real by Zanoxi Han, Kagia Gerardi, and Simeon Beresford, and is licensed under Creative Commons. You can find Radio Real on the web at radioreal.org. All music in this production is from artists on the Magnitude label. The music in the general introduction is John Playford's All in a Garden Green by Eileen Hadidian and Natalie Cox from their album Dolce Musica, A Contemplative Journey. The off-the-shelf theme music is 1500 Tons by Burning Babylon from their album Stereo Mashup. And we bid you goodbye with this song, Hagagastan 14 by Eternal Jazz Project from their album Gratis Jazz. You can learn more about Magnitude and their artists on their website at magnitude.com.